Hi, I'm Eric Nie, Editor-in-Chief of Stanford Social Innovation Review, which aims to inform and inspire leaders of social change. Learn more at ssir.org.
This SSIR podcast is made possible with the support of Vulcan. Vulcan, working to improve our planet and support our communities through catalytic technology, philanthropy, scientific research, media, and commercial ventures.
In a world where the pace of organizational learning is often slower than the pace of technological change, activists and nonprofit leaders must develop their technical intuition. Not everyone needs to become a tech expert, explains Alex Dunn of the consulting firm Computer Says Maybe, but this ongoing process of imagining, inquiring about, deciding on, and demanding technological change is critical. In this recording from our 2019 Data on Purpose conference, Dunn walks through her guidelines to help anyone to develop these skills.
Thank you for joining me in this first talk to kick off Data on Purpose. This afternoon, I'm going to share a framework for thinking about how we assess and understand where we are in our capacities within digital systems and as we use technologies in our everyday work and within our communities and organizations. I've been working for the last decade with lots of different types of organizations to support them to leverage technology for their strategies and missions. And in the course of that work, I've been sort of frustrated and inspired. Partly frustrated because I see the most amazing activists and social sector organizations sit down with technical experts and become immediately intimidated, feel inadequate, have sort of sense of like everything is just too difficult to imagine how they could ever understand what this incredibly intelligent 22-year-old web developer is telling them. So partly frustration, but partly inspiration. Because through the course of my work, I've seen activists in social change organizations not learn how to be a web designer or a web developer, but to develop a much deeper understanding of the role that technology plays in what they do and what they work on. And so I've tried to sort of build a framework of understanding what is that deep understanding, what's it made of, because it's not becoming a data scientist, it's not having everyone in your organization become an engineer, it's something else, it's something more intuitive, it's something deeper. And so I've been working with this concept called technical intuition for a few years now, and it's based on this idea that no one knows everything. There is not one person that can come into your organization and say, here is the magical system that you need to roll out, and here are all the solutions. But everybody knows something. So what does that future look like when we're able to collaborate and build interdisciplinary teams where each expertise is valued in the way that it should be valued and in the way that it needs to be valued to create projects that matter and organizations that leverage these technologies? So today, I'm going to talk about three things. One, why is technology so hard as an expertise for us to wrap our heads around? There's all kinds of expertises that we encounter every day. There's financial literacy and education. There's management. There's all kinds of things that as a nonprofit leader you have to wrap your head around. But technology presents really, really difficult challenges. We're at a conference right now talking about how to use it in your work, so it's not straightforward. So why is it so hard? Then I'm going to talk about what that means, that difficulty means for society and for civil society. And then I'm going to talk about what we can do about it. So what does it look like to go at that deeper understanding of technology and how might we be better at doing that? So why is it so hard? I just want to start with reassuring you, you're not an idiot. There are a lot of people that will walk into your office and say, I have the thing, and if you'd use this thing, you're gonna blow your mind. And they, as part of that exchange, there is a presumption and an attempt to make you feel stupid. And I think it's something that we've all experienced when there's somebody that knows something we don't know and presents themselves as the expert that makes us feel inadequate and it makes us less capable of using what that person has and putting it to work for us. So just wanted to start with that. You're not an idiot. This is hard. And I'm sure many of you have seen the hype cycle. And this is sort of a big picture of how society digests new technologies. So flashy new innovation sort of races through society. We say it's going to change everything. Think blockchain. And then we hit this peak of inflated expectations. All these really difficult problems, they can't be solved by this new innovation. It's kind of obvious, we all kind of know it, but we still go along for the ride up to that peak of inflated expectations. And then there's a collapse, where we say, well, if it can't do everything, it can't do anything. It's useless. Why have we been talking about this new technology? So we hit this trough of disillusionment, and then we kind of slowly work our way up to a slope of enlightenment and a plateau of productivity, where we all reasonably know what the technology can and can't do, and we put it to use in our work. Now, this is an important way of considering the way technology sort of moves through society, but it has huge implications for teams, because this pattern is also what you're doing as an organization every time you consider something new. And that pathway, that roller coaster, is so wasteful. The number of technologies that you consider and exaggerate the role that it can possibly play in your organization, you send your ED off to tons of conferences, they come back and they're like, oh, this is it. Every grant proposal for the next 18 months has to have this technology in it or it's a waste of time. That's a real problem, and it's a real challenge, and it's unique to technology. The second reason it's difficult is because it's difficult to know what's realistic. So if you don't understand the fundamentals of technology, it can be very difficult to know what's realistic. So in this XKCD comic, they're sort of talking about two different possible features they could incorporate in a new technology, the first being location, the second being, is it a bird, or is it what type of animal is it? The first one is quite trivial. The second literally would take a decade, and every machine learning engineer probably within 10-mile radius of this location is trying to figure out how to do that right now. So it can be very difficult to know what's realistic. The third reason is that the pace of organizational learning is different, dramatically different, than the pace of technical change. So what you see is an exponential change in technology and a logarithmic change in organizations. You can only hire so fast, you can only change direction so quickly, so how do you prioritize what technologies you consider adopting? It's also difficult because the landscape is vast. So every new technology sort of adds to this massive map of all of the things that you need to think about and consider. And so we get really tempted to go down these rabbit holes of specificity in particular domains. It's very difficult with technology to zoom out and say, what does the whole landscape look like? And how do I sort of fit in these different technologies? And then there's also different learning curves. So a lot of people think of technology as having this steep learning curve, and it's this magical skill set that no one could possibly imagine developing unless you're, you know, 21 and sharing a bedroom with like 8 people in San Francisco. But actually, the learning curve of technical skills, I think, is actually considerably less steep than non-technical skills. Becoming an expert in campaigning is a lifetime of learning in a way that becoming an expert in web design is maybe a weekend course over a 2-month period of time. So what is this difficulty, this particular challenge that technology presents, what does that mean for society? And the first is we get this really weird fetishization of technical expertise, where we say, those unicorns over there do magical things we can't possibly understand, they're amazing, we should delegate all of our space travel and whatever else to those people because they're just, they've got it figured out because they're technical. The second and sort of the resulting factor of that fetishization is that you end up having huge exclusion from fundamental decisions and power. Our digital world is increasingly our reality. So if we feel like these very, very small percentage of the population is so magical, then we're excluded. Because if we don't understand how to build technologies and how technology functions, then how can we possibly know what to demand? How can we possibly regulate these companies if they're so magical? They must know what's best for us. And it's also confusing for career paths. So this idea that if you don't code, you aren't technical, has huge consequences for how we think about education. So if we don't want everyone to become an engineer, but if you're not an engineer, then can you influence technology? Can you make choices about technology? Can you manage technical teams? Can you build digital organizations? And I think that we all know the answer to that question is yes. You don't have to be an engineer to manage a digital team. But at the same time, what is the path? How does one learn the skills you need to be able to do that and manage the sort of technical concepts that are necessary? So those are the implications for society of that difficulty. But what does this mean for civil society? And throughout the rest of this talk, I'm going to use the word organization, and I'm going to just mean that generally, because I think a lot of these concepts apply regardless of sector, but I wanted to touch specifically on implications for civil society. And the first one is the same, fetishization of technical expertise. So every organization thinks, if I don't have a data scientist, how can I possibly engage with data? That's ridiculous. that's an obsession with a particular skill set and a lack of imagination about what capacity looks like. The second implication, and this is a positive one, is that if we're in this new space where to do anything of value in technology, you need collaboration because there's so many different skills that have to be brought together for any particular project, that means no one knows everything. So there's no magical one person, which means that interdisciplinary team and collaboration is so much more important than it's ever been before. And ostensibly, civil society is pretty good at collaboration. So potentially, this opens up opportunities that doesn't necessarily exist within other expertises as they move through civil society. And then the danger of not doing that effectively is you get this misalignment between methods and mission. So this one is, I think, really critical to internalize and think about the dangers of this. The most recently, just sort of taking an example from recent headlines, the World Food Program just signed a 5-year, $45 million contract with Palantir to have Palantir manage all of their digital infrastructure and essentially humanitarian surveillance of all the people that the World Food Program serves. I'm not going to weigh in on what I think about that, but I'll say that I am talking about it in this context, so maybe that gives some hint. But we run the risk of this increasing disconnect and dissonance between what we're trying to accomplish and how we get there. And as a sector, it's never been acceptable to say that the ends justify the means. So if we're not capable of building new technical capacities, then we are not able to translate those technical capacities within our own value set. And that is a huge, huge issue for civil society, and one that I think we're pretty regularly getting wrong. I also sort of drew out a little bit of what I see as how the conversation is structured in these areas. So you end up having some people that can talk all about possibilities of technology, but nothing about harms. And then some people who can talk all about harms and nothing about possibilities. And that creates this very weird tension where none of us are actually critically assessing and sort of weighing pros and cons and opportunity costs. But hopefully that's changing a bit. So you see, you know, even the way that this conference has changed over the past few years, there's more of an alignment between, well, all technologies have pros, they have cons, they have issues, they have trade-offs. What does that look like? And what does it look like for us as individuals and organizations to be able to consider those and have really sort of deep conversations about the implications? So those are the implications for civil society in my view. And I want to talk about what do we do about it? So I've been thinking about this concept of technical intuition for quite some time as I work with organizations and I see them change and build these really deep instincts about how to think about and plan and build digital strategies and digital systems and digital projects. And I want to just take you through quickly what I see technical intuition sort of being made of. And the first is the capacity to imagine. So the capacity to think in 5 years' time, if this particular innovation were ubiquitous, how would that affect my domain? How would that affect my organization? So to be speculative, to be able to be creative, to allow yourself to imagine so many different sort of ways that the world could work. The second is the capacity to inquire. I don't know how many of you have ever tried to teach someone over the age of 60 how to use Google, but that the structure of a question is such a subtle semantic thing, but how do I ask a question about technology? It's actually not that straightforward. And if you grow a network of people that have different types of expertise and you're good at crafting those questions, you build this capacity to ask and inquire that has a huge effect on what you can do and what you can accomplish. The third is the capacity to decide. So there's also a lot of people that love reading the headlines, they love going to the conferences, they love talking about all the magic behind technology, but they don't know how to make a decision to save their life. And this means they end up wasting resources, they go all different directions, they're, you know, just all over the place. And so growing this capacity to know when it's time to act based on the information you've collected and be able to chart a path forward, sort of the third capacity within technical intuition. And the last is to demand. So knowing when to be angry, knowing when to be pissed off that the thing that you're that's supposed to work for you isn't working for you. Like, when are we supposed to be mad? We're not actually building these systems. A lot of them are actually free to use. So when are we supposed to get angry? And that's another form of technical intuition where you know when an organization or a company or whoever has crossed a line and you know when you should push back. So those are the four big pillars. I want to talk a little bit about recognizing it. So you probably are already thinking, okay, like I got that bit, you know, but maybe I'm missing this other bit over here. But thinking about recognizing it, there's five, in my view, profiles, or sort of ways of having this technical intuition. And everybody has probably one dominant one, but there's a mix. And the first is the expert. So this is the person that knows something very deeply about a particular domain. They nerd out hard on that domain. They are like always up to date on that thing. They know they can build in that thing. They're like, that is their jam, and that is the thing that they're focused on. Second is the organizer. So the person that is really good at saying, okay, we need this particular expertise. This organization has it. How do we, you know, shape a relationship and a project to be able to work with them on that? How do we build interdisciplinary teams where people are speaking different languages? How do we have the emotional intelligence to be able to navigate different sort of ways of looking at the world and thinking? So that's the organizer. The third is the planner. So that's the person that is the decider. They're like, great, this is all very exciting. What does it mean for Q3 of next year? And this is the person that really makes things happen. They sort of lay out the rails and really implement. They're also able to articulate opportunity costs. So they're the ones that bring in that sort of healthy balance of optimism and pessimism about different technologies and the decisions that they include. And then you have the leader. So this is the person that sells the vision. They go to the conference and they come back and they talk to the board and they talk to the funder and they talk to the intern and they talk to the constituent and they talk to the people in the community. And all of a sudden, 12 months later, this vision that they crafted that you kind of thought maybe was a little bit out there, it happens. They're able to sort of get that momentum, get the sort of interpersonal needs and things and move things forward. And then there's the scanner. So this is the person that's like always up to date on the latest thing. They're always reading the latest news article about something. They're always sort of sharing links and freaking you out about things. And you know, they're the person that's really, you know that person. Some of you may be that person. And they're really just curious. They're reading all the time, but maybe are not as good at translating that into action. So those are the profiles, and I want to take a little bit of time. I mean, I say hiring for it because I think most of us are in positions where we're maybe recruiting and thinking about how are our teams composed. So how might we, if we have a lot of scanners but not a lot of planners, what does it look like to recruit for that? But this is also thinking about yourself. So thinking about what you love in terms of technology and what you maybe don't love, and then how you can either grow those skills that you don't have or recruit for them so that you're not sort of have, you don't have big blind spots. And the sort of first way of recognizing it, thinking through imagine is, you know, are you able to reflect on how technology affects your domain? It's quite straightforward. You'd be really amazed if you ask somebody and you say, you know, we work in the homelessness sector or we work in sector X, you know, what do you think the implications are for technology in that space? And they're just like, I don't know. Yeah, it's quite amazing. But some people are like, oh, it has these huge implications and it's da-da-da-da-da-da, and they can tell you a lot about that. And so I think that's a really good indication that somebody has the capacity to imagine within that technical intuition framework. And then the second bit within imagine is sort of speculating about how technology will evolve, balancing that inner critic and enthusiast, and then can sort of think through speculative technology projects that your organization might consider because they can sort of think in this plane that's not about planning, but it's about imagining. And then you've got inquiring. So sort of to be able to ask questions is one part of the inquiring. The second bit of the inquiring is having the networks to be able to know who to ask the questions to. So looking for people or looking in yourself to grow your own networks within technology and data and design. Somebody that asks clear questions about new areas. So they know, even if it's something totally out there, they come to it, They know how to sort of shape the right question to get to the crux of what they want to know about that new domain. And they want to understand. This is the biggest, I think, piece of inquiring. They're not going to say, that's too hard, I'm going to go over here where it's clearer to me. They're going to ask as many questions as they need to ask to be able to understand what's good and what's worth it for them within that new technology. And then within deciding somebody that can articulate the trade-offs, so they can say, really excited about this new technology, think it would be great for this, we might have issues because it does this, and can sort of navigate those issues, and then can prioritize resources based on that. So they can say, you know, maybe some of our budget is spent on experiments, some of our budget is spent on infrastructure, and they think in those sort of pragmatic kind of terms. And they can also navigate the financial implications of technology choices. So they're able to, you know, again, ask questions, but also figure out what does it look like to sustain an app. You know, a lot of people would say, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, we're going to build an app, cost $5,000, and then when that money's gone, it'll just keep working, right? That's how that works. As we know, that's not how that works. And people that are good deciders are actually able to figure out what are the sustainability implications of launching new technologies. And then they're able to navigate those choices and make sure that the choices align to the mission. And then the last bit is demand. I've already talked a little bit, but people that know when to get angry about technology, I think that's a real indication that they've got strong sort of demand capacity within technical intuition. They know when to push back. So in conversations with a technical person who's like, hey, so on, you know, we just built you a new website, default, we're just gonna like vacuum every piece of data that we possibly can about everyone that comes to your website. Knowing to say, huh, that might be standard corporate practice, but in our way of working, that's not exactly aligned with our mission. And knowing when to push back and how to push back. And then asking for clarification without being intimidated. So being able to say, I don't feel like an idiot when you talk to me and say that. I actually think that you might be wrong, so could we maybe talk about that a bit? And knowing how to have a presence and a force when talking to someone that may have an expertise that they don't directly have. So those are the ways of recognizing in yourself or in others this technical intuition, and maybe there's areas that you see in there that you say, I don't actually have that, I want to talk a little bit about growing it. So what does it look like to grow it? Just throwing some things out there, but starting with concepts. So letting yourself not be discouraged when you are thinking about sort of big picture ideas around technology. You don't have to be able to build it to be able to understand it. And so starting at that concept level and being comfortable with sort of surfing concepts. And then building from there conceptual scaffolding. So saying, this concept connects to this concept, and I kind of get this little universe, and maybe if I could know a little bit about this, and start in your mind building some scaffolding so that these pieces fit together, and you go at the thing that you need to sort of complete that scaffolding for yourself. And then don't delegate curiosity. So many people I know in leadership positions say, I'll just ask the 22-year-old in my office, and that it doesn't work. It's not an effective way of thinking about how new things affect your strategy. You really do have to yourself be curious and engage. And then balancing that inner critic and inner enthusiast. So if you find yourself getting a little bit unmoored and really excited about something that's probably not pragmatic, reminding yourself that maybe the realities of using that technology are a bit more complex. Or if you find yourself becoming like super negative Nancy, maybe spend some time being like, but technology, you know, there's some stuff there that maybe is helpful for society. Maybe there's some things I can find here and use. And making sure that we have a healthy sort of dose of both of those things in our ways of thinking. And then lastly, experiment, but make choices. So really figure out what direction you're going. And you might do some experimentation on the side, but make sure there's an actual direction. Because chasing your tail and sort of looking at what's possible and getting excited and getting your team going in a million different directions is not a particularly good way to grow this technical intuition in your organization. So that's sort of, I mean, I've taken you guys through this big framework, and hopefully this is helpful to start thinking about not broadly what all technology things do I need to know, but instead more deeply reflect on how your sort of instincts and feelings about technology fit with other people in your organization and sort of fit along this this path of growth and learning that moves beyond this idea of you have to know how to code to be able to talk and think and do with technology.
This SSIR podcast is made possible with the support of Vulcan. Vulcan, working to improve our planet and support our communities through catalytic technology, philanthropy, scientific research, media, and commercial ventures.
You've been listening to a podcast by Stanford Social Innovation Review, a part of the Center on Philanthropy and Civil Society at Stanford University. For more podcasts, articles, and other content about innovating for social change, please visit our website at ssir.org, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. I'm Eric Nie, and thank you for listening.